Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to Unpopular. I am doing a special episode today. It's a two-part Patreon AMA. So I got all of my Patreon subscribers to submit questions and then I'm answering them in two chunks. The first episode is here. The second episode with the rest of the questions will be on Patreon. For this episode, I'm doing a lot of pop music and politics because strangely, those are two of the things that I get requested the most. People want more political takes from me and people want my thoughts on just like current music and pop music a lot of the time. So a lot of that is on here. And then for the Patreon episode, of course, there's a lot of Bravo questions. There's a lot more about my personal life and, you know, my thoughts on other podcasters and stuff like that. So let's get into it. So first up, people want to know my thoughts on the new seasons of The Traitors. So there's a new season in the UK, season 2, and then there is the new celebrity season on Peacock. So the first season of The Traitors UK was one of the best reality seasons I've ever seen. Like, it was just so fucking real with the casting they did. It was like, wow, finally seeing real people again on reality TV, and it just felt fresh and they were so immersed in it. I mean, they thought this game was real because it was the first season. It was like they were so psychologically manipulated somehow playing The Traitors that they actually thought they were going to be killed off. And it was, you know, masterful television. Season 2 does not have that same element because they've all watched it before, so they kind of know what they're doing. The diversity is still good. Like, there's a disabled model with a colostomy bag. So I love that they can cast all different types of people, you know, people that don't really have a place on other shows. It makes it very interesting. But overall, the casting is not as memorable. I think my favorites are Diane, you know, the mother, and she's in there with her son. I love Diane, the teacher. I hate Paul. I love Johnny, the amputee. He's so cute with the big ears. If you're not watching it right, he is British veteran. I think he lost his leg either in Afghanistan or Iraq. I can't remember. One of them, his leg got blown off and he has big ears and he's just adorable. And amputees are honestly really attractive. I find that a lot, like especially the ones that you like, they're still into like fitness. They have a positive outlook. It's like, yeah, you know, I lost a limb, but I'm not going to let it bring me down. And I don't know. It's just very attractive because it's kind of like, you know, it's like very masculine that they lost a limb in like an accident or a war or something. But then it's also like very like vulnerable too. And it's just everything. So I just love it. So I love Johnny, but the challenges are so boring as always. And the people don't take things as personally. And, you know, so it's just kind of like an entertaining competition show, but it's not at that level that last season was. And I don't even know if I'll finish it, to be honest. Like, I enjoy it, but do I enjoy it enough to make it appointment television every time a new episode drops? I don't know. I've watched about 4 episodes or something so far, but it hasn't blown my wig off. The American version, that is pretty fun. So I actually thought the last season of the American version was pretty bad. This season's better just because they have a really, really good all-star reality TV kind of like competition cast. Like, they've got a lot of the Big Brother legends, a lot of Survivor legends like Parvati and Sandra Diaz-Twine. It is less authentic than the UK version because they're all reality stars. So they're all kind of like starting fake reality drama and fights. It's not like the thing that makes it so interesting in the UK one is when they're having fights, it feels like real personality clashes. Whereas the US one, it's a bit more like, well, I'm on reality TV and this is the formula of a show. We start a fight and accuse each other of things. So there's like that. And there's a lot of like hamming it up, like, you know, Phaedra was actually really good on this and she like suits it and she's very funny, but you know, she's always just sort of playing a character. And Larsa Pippen is surprisingly amazing on it. Like, she's really killing it. But yeah, and I mean, it's fun. The episodes are too long. There's a lot of montages which they could cut out, a lot of sort of like repeated scenes, a lot of like music breaks. The challenges are awful. They need to really get rid of the challenges on The Traitors. I don't know what they can do, but like, these challenges need to go. They're so painful. They're like, someone messaged me and said that they're like, if you're at work and you go to like a bonding retreat at work, that's what they feel like. It's just awful. But very entertaining and I'm enjoying it. Someone said, when are you going to watch the Succession finale? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm currently obsessed with The Curse. That's my favorite. I am going to talk about The Curse on a future episode. And I'm actually going on another podcast, the I'm So Popular podcast, to do an episode about The Curse. I think I'm recording that this week. I, of course, will eventually get around to Succession. Love it, but I don't know. Things just need to be, like, perfect for me to watch it. Someone said, I know you don't care about Western pop music, but what are your thoughts on Doja Cat as an artist, her music, her dragging her fans, etc.? Well, I actually do care about Western pop music. It's just that K-pop is better, so I kind of get my fix from there, but I still dip in occasionally when there's someone that is, like, putting out some good songs. Like, I love Miley Cyrus and Lana Del Rey and who else? Yeah, there's a selection of people that I enjoy. So, yes, I do still follow, like, the Western pop music stuff. So I really like Doja. I relate to her a lot because she's in a weird position because she's not really a mainstream bitch, but she's found herself in a very mainstream career and she's actually good at doing the mainstream thing. And I think she struggles with that a lot. And I definitely feel like that being in the media world, it's like, I'm in a very mainstream sector, but that a lot of my personal interests and the opinions that I have and stuff don't align with that. And it's just like very awkward at times. And that's when I drag my listeners, which, to be honest, all the trolls are pretty much gone, most of them, so it's fine. But, like, I get it. I get why she was lashing out at people. I get why she's so moody and erratic at times. And the thing is as well is, like, her best music actually is the commercial stuff. Like, her best music isn't the weird artsy, like, moo-moo shit that she likes to do. It's like the Dr. Luke beats. You know, I think that she didn't even want to do Paint the Town Red. I think I read that that song was not on her album at first and the record label was like, please just do this one. Then they put it out as the lead single and then it's like basically her biggest hit besides Say So. So she's probably already annoyed at that. She's like, fuck. And then she put out that other song, the Agora Hills or whatever it's called, which is a good song too, but like it just didn't do as well. I think that she needs to make a decision soon about what she wants to do because, you know, the money and everything, that's tempting. In the commercial realm of things, you get all these fans, you get the money, etc., but you're not getting the same artistic creative fulfillment, and she can't really decide which lane she wants to be in. One minute she's like, all right, I'll do the pop star thing. The next minute she's like, no, I want to do my, you know, dress up as a cow and, like, moo and, you know, do this stuff, or I want to, like, rap. Like, what was the Kendrick Lamar wannabe song that she did that kind of flopped? She needs to just pick a lane or find a way that she can be okay with, you know, creating art and, like, monetizing it. I don't know. Maybe she can go into a different business. Maybe she can, like, put the money that she's earned into, like, some other venture that's going to make money for her. And then she can just sort of, like, do her art on her own. Maybe she can be, like, a fucking Twitch streamer. I don't know. But she needs to figure something out. Someone asked me about Ariana Grande and Lil Nas X's new singles. So Ariana's song, it's called Yes And. It's a dance track. It samples Madonna's Vogue. It's like fun for the gay clubs, I guess, but it's also embarrassing and generic. It sounds like a white girl version of Beyoncé's Renaissance album because that was all like, oh, I'm a gay icon. I'm doing queer dance music. I actually really hate these pop girls appropriating the gay dance music thing. Like, it's one thing to make pop music that is good for radio and the gays just generally love because, like, gays just like pop music. But when they try to specifically be like, no, I'm making, like, gay club music, it's so cringe and gimmicky. And it's always, like, the same thing as well. It's, like, the same, like, house beat with gay Twitter lingo lyrics, which is what they both did. Like, Beyoncé did that with the whole Renaissance era. And I remember she was like, oh, yeah, my uncle was gay and this is, like, a tribute to him. It's like, we never heard about this gay uncle before and now suddenly you're all about the gays. Like, Beyoncé was raised so heteronormative, conservative. She's from fucking Texas. She's like a conservative black church lady. She hangs out with, you know, like, Gwyneth Paltrow and shit. And then she changes into these images for each album, and it's just so insincere. Like, she like came from very well-to-do family. Like, her parents were very successful. They had money. And then when she started, and she was never political, really, and then she starts embracing, like, the Black Panthers and BLM, and her songs are like, I get fucked in Red Lobster with hot sauce in my bag. Like, girl, like, you are not about that life. Like, where did this come from? I mean, you've been married since you were, like, 18. Like, you could not be more conservative and straight-laced. And, like, yeah, go vote Republican and, like, go to, you know, church on Sunday and, like, sing the gospel and stuff. Like, that's who you are. And then she appropriates these different images, and then she did it with the whole gay renaissance thing of, like, yeah, I'm queen of the gays. It's like, oh, my God. And then all of the lyrics and stuff on that album, and, like, I looked at some tour clips. It's like, cunty, hunty, like, RuPaul's Drag Race stuff over these, like, old dance beats that we've heard a million times before. So I kind of feel like Ariana Grande's doing that now. And Ariana felt like more of a gay icon when she's just doing, like, her urban pop songs that we all like. And, you know, like, Thank You Next and all of that stuff. And then just naturally the gays like it. And now it's like, you're trying too hard. Like, you'll never be Madonna. Madonna was actually about that life. And yeah, I'm just over it. But yeah, it's a cute song. Like, if I listened to that music when I went out, I guess I'd be into it, but, like, I like more, like, R&B and stuff when I go out anyway, so I don't care. There are some pop girls that I do think are good at, like, making the specific gay music. Like, I think Slade is really good, and I like Charlie XCX, and I like Azalea Banks. Like, Azalea Banks has a genuine gay following, but these other ones, it's just so fake and gimmicky. And then Lil Nas X, okay, he has this new single, Jay Christ. So I love him. I think he's, like, the most charismatic, the hottest. Like, I think he's, like, the best-looking celebrity, basically. I think he's kind of, like, the most talented, the funniest. I'm such a fan. He has this new song, Jay Christ, that is, like, about Jesus, sort of. And he's dressed as Jesus, and then he's dressed in drag again. And I don't get what he's doing. The song is about nothing. Like, I was trying to figure it out. I was sort of like, you know, I love Lil Nas X. There's got to be more behind this, because people were saying, oh, God, he's just, like, you know, trying to troll Christians again. I'm like, no, there's got to be, like, some more substance to this. I read the lyrics of the song. The song's about nothing. It's just about how he's, like, having a comeback and how people are trying to, like, figure out what he's doing. Like, it's not about anything. It's like, okay, you've confused us. You've done a song about confusing us, but, like, what else is going on? Like, is there anything else? I thought maybe, is he doing, like, a Christian album, which I thought would be cool, because I'm like, maybe he can do, like, a Stacey Aiko vibe, because Stacey Aiko had all these great Christian pop songs back in the day, but they were, like, very modern. It was, like, the same kind of production that you have for, like, top 40 radio songs, and they were so catchy, but they had, like, you know, interesting, like, good Christian messaging. So I thought maybe he's sort of, like, doing, like, a modern, like, pop, hip-hop, like, gospel sort of vibe. Like, that would be cool, but it's not. Like, it's just nothing. Like, it just feels like he's stuck in the era that he was in the last album, because the last album he did all of the Christian imagery, and he did the Satan shoes, and he was giving Satan a lap dance and stuff, which was, like, fine, and, like, it worked for that era, and that album was, like, really good. So it's like, good for you, girl, but you're supposed to, like, reinvent with a new image. Like, you've come out with your new album and your new era after taking a big break, and then you're still just, like, dressing in drag and, like, you know, twerking on Christians or whatever. It's really embarrassing. It's like, girl, like, get it together, because I know he's, like, better than this. So yeah, and I did not want to be on the, like, anti Lil Nas X bandwagon. I didn't want to be, like, you know, Candace Owens and people like that reacting to him. I wanted to be the one that comes out and goes, no, guys, you actually don't get it. Like, this is brilliant, but I'm trying to find something more to what he's doing, and there's nothing there. Jess asked me what my top five Madonna songs across her entire catalog are. I can't choose, like, a top five. Like, she just has too many good songs, and especially the early stuff. So I can't do a top five. So I'm just going to list off, like, a bunch of songs that I like, because, like, most of her songs are good. Like, most of the singles are really good. Like, you could pretty much erase all of pop music and then just have the Madonna kind of greatest hits albums, you know, the three or four of them that there are, and that could just be the only pop music that you listen to for the rest of your life, and like you'd be fine. So yeah, I just made a list of like songs that I really, really love from her. So Lucky Star, Dress You Up. Dress You Up is definitely like very much up there. Into the Groove, obviously. I love Human Nature because it's so urban. I love Secret, Don't Tell Me. Get Together is really, really good. And like, I like how kind of like cute and like optimistic and like romantic it is, because a lot of pop songs that are about love are more just about like, you know, having sex or like having your heart broken. So I love the songs that are like kind of cutesy and uplifting about that, but like also like not cheesy, you know, not like fucking Celine Dion, but actually have like cool pop production and stuff, but like cute lyrics. So that's why I like Get Together. Also love Profusion, which kind of falls under the same category. I love Hollywood. I love Die Another Day. That's definitely like one of the best Bond songs. I love like all of the American Life album. Like I think that's probably my favorite Madonna album. I actually really love now, in retrospect, Give Me All Your Lovin' with Nicki Minaj and MIA. And when that kind of came out with the Super Bowl, I remember it was like a big letdown and people were like, oh, really? Like, this is kind of like basic and it's kind of generic and, you know, whatever. But then I feel like over time, it's aged really well and like it's so fun. And I feel like you could like still put it out now and it would sound good on the radio. So that song age very well. I love Medellin with Maluma. That's like the Latin pop song that she did. That's like definitely one of her best singles. I was like, wow, I can't believe Madonna is like doing a song of like this caliber. Like, this is so next level. And when she put it out, I was like, fuck, if like, you know, Rihanna or something like that dropped this, this would actually be a hit. But then, you know, because Madonna's older, like no one cares, so it flopped. And I also think Give It To Me has aged really well. I always loved Give It To Me because I love Pharrell and the Neptunes, and all of their beats are like kind of the same, which is fine by me. Like, I can pretty much listen to every single thing that they produce in that style. So I always loved Give It To Me, but it just sounds like better and better with time. Like, it's really, really held up. So those are my favorite Madonna songs. Someone asked me for my favorite K-pop and non-K-pop songs of the year. I actually feel bad listing this because on Patreon, and I've answered it too, I got asked to name my favorite movies. I really was like not that across music and film this past year in the way that I would like to be. And yeah, I get like OCD about it because it's like, I want to like hear everything so I can make a proper judgment. And I definitely felt myself with film and music, especially just going for like the easy option. Like, let me just watch like the easy horror movie. Let me just listen to like pop music and K-pop on repeat because it's just repetitive and I don't have to think about it. And if I'm at the gym or I'm like walking around, you know, I just don't have to think. I can like switch off, which is okay in like moderation, but I don't like to do that all the time. And I felt like that was all I did. Because, you know, when I listen to like a, you know, quote unquote real music, you know, I like to be in the zone of, you know, like having some candles lit, maybe. I'm like having a bath. I'm like winding down at night. I'm kind of like switching off a bit and I'm really listening to the lyrics and taking it in. And I just don't really like put that side a time for music, that side, that time aside for music. So I go for the easy option. Like, I think the only, honestly, like the only album I even listened to was the Zac Brown album and then some of the Lana Del Rey album. But then some of my favorite artists, like I love that band Beach House. I just love anything that's like vibey background music. And I love Beach House. And I also am a big fan of this guy, Kurt Vile. He's like a singer-songwriter. It's kind of psychedelic. I love him. And they released new records last year and like I didn't even listen to them. I was like, yeah, I'll get around to that. And then, you know, I just didn't go there. So I think for K-pop, obviously NewJeans, everything NewJeans, not even like a specific song, just everything that they did. I just listened to NewJeans like on repeat, all of their music like nonstop. And then my most played song of the year actually was Tell Me by 50/50. So that was my other one. And then I'll just stop there because I listened to like every K-pop song basically. So it's like, I know every song. And then if I even start, I'm going to list like 40 million songs. And then just on like non-K-pop, it was a lot of like dumb dance music. Actually, I listened to a lot of like gay ass dance music this year for real. Like Kylie Minogue, obviously, like Panam Panam, but like Tension was my favorite from her. That song I listened, oh my God, I played the shit out of Tension, just like on repeat, like even before the actual full song came out and snippets were leaking, I was listening to like fan made snippets that they'd stitched together. That's how obsessed I was with it. And then I did listen to Troye Sivan, Rush a lot. So yeah, a lot of gay ass dance stuff that Ariana and Beyonce could never do because, you know, it's just not authentic to them. I loved the Billie Eilish song. I'm a big Billie Eilish fan. I loved the Barbie ballad. I actually thought that was probably the best song of the year, just like of any genre, I think. I loved that Barbie song. And I really liked Miley Cyrus's song, Jaded. I wasn't that into Flowers, honestly. Like, it was fine. Like, I didn't have anything against Flowers, but I never went out of my way to listen to it. But I really, really liked Jaded. And I listened to Bad Bunny, obviously, just like, honestly, like most of my music was literally just skipping between Bad Bunny and New Jeans. Like that's, and like one Kylie Minogue song. Like that's almost all I listened to for an entire year. But I actually listened to a lot of female rap outside of that. And I used to really be into female rap and then I kind of got out of it. And then I like really got back in because again, it's just like fun and repetitive and easy, you know, and like hypes you up. So I guess that's the mood that I was in musically this past year. So I listened to a lot of like Glorilla. I love Glorilla, Scarlip, Sexy Red, Flo Milli, Ruby Rose, like Cardi and Meg, obviously, Iggy, because some of her songs were like going viral again. My favorite is definitely Scarlip, like No Statements and Blick. I love Scarlip and like I love her whole personality and just like everything about her. Like she's one of my faves. And I did listen to a lot of Sexy Red songs. Like at first I was really obsessed with her and then I was kind of over it. And then I circled back and I got back into it. So I really like Hellcats, SRTs, and Female Gucci Mane, and obviously Pound Town. And what other songs? Oh, I love the song she has with Drake as well, the Rich Baby Daddy. I love that. So, yeah. Then someone also asked one of my favorite reggaeton albums or songs. I actually don't have like a favorite reggaeton album. Because I listen to Bad Bunny all the time. Like he's one of my like most played artists. And, you know, I know like Rosalia and some of the other, you know, big, obviously names that everyone knows, but outside of like Bad Bunny, I really just listen to like the related, like I just go down and listen to the related artists in the playlist and I never know who I'm listening to or what is what. And like, it all sounds good to me. I mean, it all kind of sounds the same. Like most reggaeton is literally just like the same beat over and over. So I just like go down the rabbit hole on that. I do like this one guy, Tiny. He has this album called Data and it's all these collaborations with different artists. And it's not like typical reggaeton. Like he puts like other genres in there and like mixes it up. So I really love like when, you know, different genres come together. So that's cool. Oh my God. Okay. Someone asked on Patreon my thoughts on Israel Palestine, which I have talked about a little bit. I'll try to answer this the best I can without completely flying off the rails. I was going to say I'll try and not take too long, but then knowing me, like I will. So whatever, I'll probably take a while. And if it sounds awkward, it's probably because like I have to soften my opinion around certain things. Maybe I've edited, you know, I might edit some parts out after I talk about this because it's kind of like you have to avoid certain words because the ADL and other groups have all these fake, stupid rules about like what you're allowed to say on the subject. And then if you fail to comply, they can smear you and say you're an anti-Semite and then they can affect your career. Like even in Australia, this has happened. Like I know someone that had a podcast deal dropped, you know, journalists have been fired and suppressed and stuff. So it's very weird as well. Cause it's like, I work in media. I can't comment on a fucking foreign government and country. No, apparently not. Apparently you actually, can't, there's certain countries you're not allowed to criticize for some reason. So that's interesting. Meanwhile, all of the supposedly pro-America, America First conservatives will defend that and they'll say it's totally fine that you can't criticize a foreign government, but you're America First? Okay. I've posted a lot of pro-Palestinian stuff on Instagram. I've mentioned it here and there on the pod like a bit, but yeah, I mostly post on Instagram and I am careful about what I post. Like, you know, you have to be careful that it doesn't criticize Israel, that it's more about, like, you know, broadly criticizing war or, you know, showing the death tolls and stuff. Because, yeah, again, you supposedly you're not supposed to criticize them. And I've lost so many followers and Patreon subscribers and had messages from people and, you know, long-time people that listened to me for a long time. And I'll probably lose more after this, and I literally don't care. I tried to bite my tongue in the beginning as best as I could, and actually partially just because I didn't want to offend anybody Jewish that listens to the pod, because, you know, I have heaps of cool Jewish listeners that message me all the time, and, you know, I want to be respectful. And I mean, yeah, I mean, it wasn't really the time or the place to, like, get into the whole history of things, I didn't think, anyway. Like, when stuff was fresh, it was sort of, like, inappropriate. So, yeah, I was trying to not weigh in so much, and then I started to kind of, like, speak out about, you know, the civilian death toll was so bad. And, you know, then eventually I'm just like, fuck it. I don't even give a fuck if I get cancelled. Like, this is going on, like, way too long. Like, I have to say something. You know, usually you're not supposed to criticize any of America's military action or wars until years later. Like, everyone criticizes what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, politicians, like, run on that now, going like, you know, we fucked up the war and, you know, here, and we can't have that happen again. And everyone agrees. But then if you say it at the time, then suddenly you're a terrorist sympathizer and, you know, a traitor. Oh, yeah, I should add in, I condemn Hamas, etc. Obviously, I do. But, yeah, you got to put in the disclaimers, because then actually if you say anything that is against Israel, then people are so stupid, they go, oh, well, you must support terrorists then. So, yeah, I try to bite my tongue. Didn't last long. I've lost followers and listeners. And, you know, I have a lot of, like, centrist and conservative skewing listeners too, because I'm the only non-woke entertainment pod. And a lot of them fall on the pro-Israel side. So I'm kind of, like, pushing my own audience away. And, you know, I don't care. And I know that my voice isn't changing anything. I know that literally it's, like, detrimental to me even talking and posting about it. I know I'm not helping myself. I know I'm putting myself at risk of, like, you know, career repercussions. I don't care. Once you really see what's going on, and not like the fake mainstream American cable news version, but like the actual reality of the situation, you can't, like, not say anything, or you're either just a coward or a fucking sociopath, and I'm neither of those. And it is kind of crazy how many people are not speaking out, because, you know, I know people that have the same views as me and they're afraid to say anything, which I understand, because it's like they don't want to, you know, lose jobs and stuff. But even, like, supposedly, you know, outspoken commentators in the media that I would usually expect to have weighed in on this have kind of, like, tiptoed around it. Like, even with the whole Candace Owens thing, she obviously is more on the Palestinian side of what's going on, and she has kind of, like, been outspoken, but, like, not to the level that she would be. And then she went on maternity leave, and then she came back, and she's kind of, like, avoided it. Russell Brand, he would be so pro-Palestine, and if he had the balls to really be speaking out, every single day of his YouTube show would be on this, because he spent so long on Ukraine, so long on, like, every other conflict. He did have Norm Finkelstein on his show to speak up for Palestine. Norm Finkelstein is, like, the most famous pro-Palestinian voice. He's Jewish. His parents are Jewish Holocaust survivors, and he, you know, which is good for him, because it's harder to call him anti-Semitic. I mean, they still do call him anti-Semitic, even though he's the son of Holocaust survivors. They still smear him with that. But he's one of the biggest voices and always has been on this subject. So Russell Brand had him on, but he's not doing, like, daily coverage, which he would be if this was anything else. Tucker Carlson, my man, he's kind of criticized Ben Shapiro, and he's kind of spoken out about it in a roundabout way, but he won't really go there. And knowing Tucker's views, he would not support Israel. I just know he doesn't, but he won't go there. And, like, I even saw an interview that he did where Dave Smith, who I love, asked him about it. And Tucker was like, you know, I'm just focusing on what's going on in America. I don't really want to talk about that. You know, I live in America, so I just want to talk about America. It's like, girl, You spent like the last year on Fox News doing nightly updates about Ukraine, which you still talk about. And I think you went over to Russia or something to kind of investigate this. Like, he talks about foreign policy stuff all the time. When he recently went independent with his new network, he said one of the best things was he can actually get out and travel again and go, you know, because he's been to the Middle East, he's been to Israel, everything. He was like, can't wait to talk about every other country. And then they asked him about Israel. He goes, I'm just going to talk about what's at home. Like, they won't speak up. Alex Jones, he's coming out as like pro-Israel. You look at the old clips of Alex Jones. He's like, he knew what was going on and talked about the violence against the Palestinians. And I know that he had that huge, you know, the huge lawsuit and everything. But girl, everyone is scared to speak up. Like, that's why a lot of people aren't getting the correct information on this. I've started going to the demonstrations. There's even demonstrations for Palestine here in my small ass Australian town. They're having them now every weekend. So it's kind of like the groundswell for the support for Palestinians is huge. But then what the governments are doing is just, you know, completely disconnected from what people want. And it's like, unless you're doing what I'm doing, which is just spending hours every day watching documentaries and looking at everything that's coming out of all different sides of this and, you know, really like getting the whole picture, you don't really get it. And then you also sound like a crazy person when you try to talk to people about it because it's so evil. People just assume like it just doesn't compute in their head. That what's happened post October 7th and what's happened before, people just think you're nuts. Like, you can have receipts, proof, timelines, screenshots, everything. No, Israel's, you know, perfect formula, and it's too much for people. And then they can't even be bothered learning about it, which is fine because not everyone needs to know. You know, like, there's plenty of horrible things going on in the world that I'm not aware of. But then it's like, bitch, don't act like I'm the crazy one. Then I try to educate you on it. And then you like, are like, oh, I can't be bothered looking at it. Like, girl, shut the fuck up. Like, it's disgusting. The way that Palestinians have been dehumanized in this, they're treated like they're trash. When people are like, well, why can't Jordan and Egypt take them? As if they're like unwanted trash. Like, they don't fucking live in Egypt. They live in Palestine. Like, that's where they want to be. And don't just act like, oh my God, why can't someone else take them? We don't want them here in America. It's like, okay, so you'll supply Israel with the bombs to bomb them and then create like the worst refugee crisis, then be like, we can't have them here. Like, is so bad. What else? The worst defense is there's no innocent Palestinians. Okay, so a toddler's a terrorist. So you're okay with like murdering children. And American conservatives and woke liberals are so bad on this, both of them. Like, I got called racist for so long about Bravo shows, and then I see all these same accounts. Bitch, they don't say shit about fucking brown Arabs being killed and slaughtered, but they turn into an activist over a microaggression against Garcelle that they've like made up in their head. Okay, not that I ever liked fucking liberals anyway. Fuck them, another example of their hypocrisy. And then the conservatives are the worst because it's like they've abandoned every principle that apparently they stood for before. Okay, so it's like now you're against free speech. Conservatives have spent years saying they support free speech. Now they're totally against it. If you speak up for Palestine, they want protesters thrown in jail, all of that. So you don't support free speech. You don't support criticism of a foreign government. Okay, that's weird. I thought you were America first, but I guess not. They want safe spaces on campus. They support DEI for Jews. So they spent so long going on about how they hate DEI for black people. Now, like, I just saw Ron DeSantis is pushing a thing for Jews, and of course conservatives are supporting it. Now they support all mainstream media. So before, mainstream media from conservatives was fake news and bullshit. And the fucking mainstream media has a well-documented history of lying pretty much about every single war. They have such a fucking history we can all point to, and we're all aware of it, and the weapons of mass destruction, etc. Now suddenly conservatives believe all mainstream media on this. They believe in censorship of social media. They believe in banning TikTok. They believe in sending American tax dollars to a foreign country. They let Netanyahu, a foreign leader, boss America around, talk shit about how he can get America to do whatever he wants. That's on video. So yeah, you want to send money to the person that's talking shit about you and thinks that you're a fucking chump. They support America getting involved in another useless bullshit war that could end up with American soldiers being killed, given how it's fucking escalating now and stuff going on with Lebanon and everything. So you support that. Like, what about you as America first? Israel cares about Israel. America should care about America and get the fuck out of the Middle East. America right now is like Heather Gay and Israel is Jen Shah. And it's like, stop defending Jen Shah. Like, she's crazy. Like, she's a criminal. Like, you were a fan favorite when you started this girl. Heather, we all loved you on the show. And now you look crazy because you keep defending Jen Shah. And now we're starting to question you and your morals because of your support for Jen Shah. Don't you think it's weird, even as, again, with conservatives who are supposed to question these narratives, don't you think it's weird that they made up that lie at the beginning that Hamas beheaded 40 babies, which was not true? Joe Biden went and publicly stated that. He said that he had seen evidence of it, which didn't even exist and turned out to not even be true. It never even happened. How are you okay with the president of the United States repeating fucking Israeli propaganda just so that Israel can justify their own bloody rampage against the Palestinians? Like, really, you want like a fucking foreign government lying to the president of the United States and having them repeat that? It just shocks me that conservatives support this. I know a lot of them are getting their news from The Daily Wire and The Megyn Kelly Show, etc., but it's like, you need to switch news sources because this is going against apparently everything that you guys believe in. You guys want to know more about what's happening? There's like a trillion places I could send you. The best place is actually just to start with South Africa's case against Israel because, you know, again, South Africa, honey, they have Israel's perfect formula, the receipts, the proof, timeline, screenshots. Like, half of that case is literally just quoting Israeli, high-ranking Israeli politicians and military officials about what they're doing. Like, they say it themselves. Like, it's in their own words. It's not even an opinion. So there's some really good breakdowns of that. Crystal Ball did a good one on YouTube. Just type in Crystal Ball, Israel, South Africa, ICJ or something, and it'll come up. And there's so many documentaries too that predate October 7th. There's a BBC Louis Theroux one called The Ultra Zionists. Watch that. That's great. They have a new one that's getting a lot of buzz called Israelism, and that's actually made by American Jews. They were raised Zionist. Then they went to Israel and they saw what was really going on and how the Palestinians were being treated and how they didn't have rights. And now they're very outspoken against it. They support Palestine. That one's really, really interesting and well-made, and I hope more people see it and it gets a bigger platform. There's a lot of debates on YouTube that are amazing and really informative. I've watched so many of them. 9 out of 10 of them, the Palestinian side wins, like, very easily. I'm very hopeful for the younger generation on TikTok and social media and that they are seeing the truth. You know, because Gen Z are not watching The View and CNN and Fox News. They're on social media and they're super autistic and they love a deep dive. So they're deep diving into the history and seeing exactly what's going on. And now, of course, the powers that be are trying to censor social media because they don't want any of us being able to see what the fuck is going on. You saw it during COVID. Again, do the math. What did they do during COVID when we were trying to get the truth about COVID? They started coming down hard on social media, banning what we could talk about. Now that people are getting information on social media about Israel, now you have Nikki Haley and other people going, we need to ban TikTok, we need to censor TikTok. So please wake the fuck up. Okay, that's it. Let's move on. Someone asked what my favorite podcasts are. To be honest, I haven't listened to that many podcasts for a long time. Again, all I really follow is like Gaza, Israel, Palestine stuff. Which includes the Martyr Maid podcast. Actually, that's considered one of the leading podcasts on this. It's really, really long. Like, I can't remember how long. It might get up to like 30 hours or something, but they do a history on the conflict and it's actually like very sympathetic to Israel, which is good because it goes into all of the horrors that, you know, the Jewish people went to in the past and then how that sort of affected things moving forward. It's really good. So that's definitely a good place to get information on it. And then outside of that, obviously, I always love Red Scare and Rare Candy and Red Scare, but I haven't listened to either of them in a minute, to be honest. I love the Brett Easton Ellis podcast for film stuff. I just listened to Quentin Tarantino on there, which was actually like really annoying, but I do like Bee's Pod. I love the Juicy Scoop Patreon, and you know, I like some Joe Rogan here and there. Obviously, I love, you know, Joe himself, but I'll go over to his podcast sometimes and see who the latest guest was and dip in and out of that. So that's always good. And there's other podcasts I like, but I just haven't been listening to many at all lately, really. I'm only listening to news on the conflict and watching documentaries and stuff. Someone said, where do you get your news from? Which is a really good question. I'm glad you asked. I go in and out of the news cycle a lot. Like, I know now it sounds like I'm so into politics, but I get really into it and then I take a step back because I do think that it's unhealthy. And actually, I would probably be paying a lot. Like, if this conflict wasn't going on right now, I didn't feel compelled to be informed on it because it's fucking so bad, I would probably be taking a break from my own sanity right now. But okay, so with news, first, all TV news is fake, basically. Like, it's entertaining, but, like, anything that's cable news, it doesn't matter, like, left or right. Like, most of it's bullshit. I think Tucker was probably the best person, but he put out a lot of, like, there was a lot of garbage on his show. It was very entertaining because he's very funny. There's a lot of bullshit on his show, but he was sort of one of the only people that would kind of... Oh, actually, there are other people besides him. Sometimes the cable news people, whether it's Rachel Maddow or Mehdi Hasan or Tucker Carlson, will like slip something in where you're like, oh, I'm surprised. But for the most part, cable news is fake. Written news is still factual. You just, you've got to read a lot of different websites and you've sometimes got to, they bury the lead a lot. That's what written news does. Like, I think before I mentioned the Australian nurse that was saying that Israel was attacking the medical vans, like that should have been the headline. The headline was, it was like, you know, wounded, horrific destruction on children in Gaza, something like that. Of course, they don't say, you know, horrific destruction on children in Gaza by the IDF. No, you can't say that, even though that's where it's coming from. But they'll have that as the headline. And then we already know children are being killed there, right? Like, you can't really argue with that. So I read the whole article and it wasn't until right at the bottom, this Australian nurse is going, yeah, like, they're attacking us, the IDF. And I'm like, that's the headline, girl. Like, really? Like, in Australia, I know Australian media, there was a headline that said IDF attacking Australian nurses trying to save children's lives. People would be outraged, but it's buried down the bottom, but it's still there. Like, they have factual reporting, but they'll just bury it. So you've got to like read down with all of the, you know, all of that and sort of pass through it. That's why it is good to listen to commentators that you trust because they do that heavy lifting for you. That's kind of their job. So I would say the main news shows, this should be the base standard if you like American politics, is Breaking Points and The Hill Rising. They're both on YouTube. I believe Breaking Points has a podcast version. They're really good. They're like the best base level for just American news of the day. I feel like all mainstream news should be at the standard that they do. And I don't always agree with them. Like, they were not critical enough of the COVID vaccine at the start, but they're not super radical in either direction. They just kind of generally report what's happening, and they have a really interesting setup because they have one person, they usually have a woman that is more on the left, and then they have a man that is more on the libertarian right wing side. That's the format. So you get them like arguing and debating topics from their different viewpoints, which is really good. And like, they've covered the Gaza Israel stuff so well. They've really been like giving you what the mainstream news should be giving you on this. And then, yes, they do have the right-wing side. So there's pushback and there's like a lot of arguments. Like on The Hill Rising especially, it's been brutal because Robbie, the libertarian guy, tries to make basically any excuse to justify killing children. But, you know, before that, the girl on the left-wing side, she would not budge at all on COVID. And then Robbie, the libertarian, was the one that was like getting the truth on COVID. So it's just interesting. So Breaking Points, The Hill Rising, like I really, really recommend them. Cut off any cable news and just replace it with them. And then... you know, you can get further down. So I love Glenn Greenwald. Love Glenn Greenwald. He's the one that did all the exposed the Edward Snowden stuff and worked with Snowden. He's amazing. I agree with him on almost everything, you know, at least everything that I can understand. Like, he has some areas like Brazilian politics I don't know anything about or really care that much about, so I don't follow that part. But all of his stuff on like American politics and foreign policy and free speech, etc. Love Glenn Greenwald. He's a really great follow on X/Twitter, or he has a YouTube show / podcast called System Update. I'm currently obsessed with Dave Smith. He's a libertarian comedian. His show is called Part of the Problem. You have to subscribe to that. And he's Jewish, and he's super on the Palestinian side, and he's Jewish, so he knows all the history. And he's been doing all of these debates with everyone on the right wing and different sides to debate Israel versus Palestine. And he fucking clears every debate. He kills it. And he's such a friendly, nice guy. He doesn't devolve into like personal insults or anything. His show is funny. He has the most accurate read on American politics, in my opinion. He is super libertarian, and there's a lot of libertarian things that I like don't agree with, or I think it is kind of like crazy when they're like, yeah, we're libertarian, we're allowed to own an RPG, and you know, a lot of that I don't co-sign. But when he's doing like the US political news, doing COVID stuff, doing Israel Palestine, he's amazing. And I'm glad to recommend you these people, because I keep getting lumped in now with the blue haired, you know, Antifas, because a lot of them support Palestine. And then people think that, I mean, I'm happy to stand, if we agree on the same issue, I don't care to stand behind stand next to the blue-haired liberal. But there's like plenty of libertarians and conservatives and stuff, and anti-establishment people that are like on the Palestinian side. I agree with Russell Brand generally, but I don't watch his show because I just think it's annoying. So I don't like his, you know, he does a comedic delivery. I don't find it that funny. Two of the journalists, reporters, pundits, whatever, online that I trust the most are Michael Tracy and Kim Iverson. They're super, super contrarian. I totally recommend following them. I love Michael Tracy. I mean, you think I'm a contrarian. Michael Tracy is like next level. But he does like real on the ground reporting. I think he's in like Iowa and stuff now, covering the fucking primary. When the Gaza Palestine stuff broke, he went straight to fucking Israel to go on the ground reporting there. Of course, he's pro Palestine because he sees what's up. But I love him, and I love Kim Iverson. I think she's on YouTube, the Kim Iverson show. She has the most integrity out of anybody, and I followed her for years now. And she's actually not like the smartest. Like, sometimes she has really dumb takes, but I don't care when she gets something wrong or she says something stupid, because I know that it hasn't come from, when you're pursuing the truth sometimes, like, and you're going against the grain, like, you're going to get things wrong sometimes. But I remember she used to be on The Hill Rising before she was replaced, and she actually quit because they were having Fauci on the show, and Kim Iverson was the number one against the COVID narratives from day one, and she was just going off of the data and questioning it when literally no one else was questioning it before she was. And she got hired on The Hill Rising. She was very much against like a lot of what they were doing with COVID, and she would get mocked by her fellow panelists and treated like she was a crazy conspiracy theorist. And of course, she turned out to be right on everything. And they had Fauci on the show, and then the producers of the show said, you can't come on, Fauci won't sit with you. And she said, she was like, my audience knows me as, you know, having so much integrity on this subject. You cannot have Fauci on this show and not have me here to confront him and ask him the tough questions. She goes, that puts my integrity into question. And then they just said no. So she quit, and she never came back, and she just went back to YouTube doing her own things. I just love her. I do love Tucker Carlson, but I'm just very skeptical of him. You know, I watch his stuff, and then if I'm like, oh, that's interesting, you know, what he said, then I'll have to go research it for myself to make sure if it's true or not, because sometimes you don't know if Tucker's dropping a truth bomb or if he's playing character or whatever. If you are into conspiracy stuff, girl, Whitney Webb is the real deal, okay? This is not some QAnon bullshit. She goes deep. I don't really even have the time to follow her stuff so deep, but if you want to get on, like, especially with the Epstein stuff, she takes it to like a different level. She doesn't just do the which celebrity was on Epstein's flight. Like, she goes in deep. She is great. Like, she doesn't even live in America anymore. She lives in Chile and reports from there. She has a podcast called what is it called? Hangout Room or something. But her name's Whitney Webb. She's really good. You can YouTube her, and she is the go-to on the real conspiracy stuff. This is like real stuff of like what they're really doing with, you know, censorship and everything. She's really great. And then I love Matt Taibbi, Michael Schellenberger on Substack, Alex Gutentag. But yeah, okay, that's whatever. There's a lot of people that I like, but just you have to subscribe to Breaking Points and The Hill Rising for sure for the base. And then honestly, Glenn Greenwald, Dave Smith, definitely subscribe to Dave Smith, Part of the Problem, especially if you guys are conservatives or on or libertarian or in the middle, please listen to them because, girl, you're not getting the truth on this Palestine stuff from the Daily Wire and Megyn Kelly and all of those other people. They are lying to you or they just don't know any better, okay? So get onto the real shit. Someone said, are you nervous about the US election / what is your opinion on presidential candidate RFK Jr.? I'm not nervous. I actually am fairly indifferent to this election because, you know, I've gone through too many times like having faith in certain candidates and then they turn out to be a fraud, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Tulsi Gabbard or like whoever, like Andrew Yang, like just so many of them. So I'm not, you know, I'm not going to fucking fall for the same shit every time, you know, Obama. I've been through this all and, you know, they're all fakes and frauds. So I kind of don't care who wins. And I'm also obviously more into the whole Gaza stuff that I'm not as invested in the presidential race. The only thing I'm concerned about is Joe Biden being reelected or Nikki Haley winning. I believe either one of those candidates would destroy America, essentially. You know, I don't mean they're going to destroy it in 4 years, but I worry that they'll put America on a path that America cannot come back from, or that will take, you know, it'll just add decades to like fixing America if they get in power. I think they could very well start World War III. I know people love to exaggerate that. Oh my God, Trump is going to start World War III, even though he had like less wars than any of the others. Okay. But no, I feel like Joe Biden and Nikki Haley could start World War III. They have no morals, especially Nikki Haley. There's nothing that she won't do for money. She is vile. She would kill 100 million people if she could fucking get $100 million. Like, she is the most evil, disgusting thing ever. Joe Biden is a Tales from the Crypt ghoul from hell. I mean, he's senile now. I can only hope that, I mean, am I allowed to, well, I am trying to get to the US. You know what? God bless Joe Biden. Vaccines are safe and effective. And, you know, Israel's defending itself. Let's add that in. No, but who do I like in the race? There's a handful of people that I like, but most of them I don't trust, including Trump. I like Trump. I like Jill Stein of the Green Party. I like RFK Jr. I like Vivek Ramaswamy. I like Marianne Williamson. I have faith in none of them. Okay, so Marianne Williamson, she is so easily misled and manipulated. Like, I think she's a good person with good intentions. That's why I like her, because I don't think that she's a soulless ghoul like most of the other ones. She's very empathetic, but it's like she's too empathetic. You can mold her almost in any direction. Like, if she ever got in, which she's not going to, but just say something happened and she became the president, girl, they would pull her puppet strings so fast, and it wouldn't even be her fault. She would just have them all around her, getting in her ear and steering her astray. So, you know, I think she's a great public figure and she can do a lot of good for people, but it's not in the presidential office. RFK, don't trust him. He's not some grassroots independent. He's actually backed by all kinds of big money. He's very compromised. His support of Israel, I'm totally against. I don't know if it's sincere or not. I've heard different things because I would assume that he would know what's going on because he's a smart guy. But then I've heard that he doesn't that much and he's very sincere in his support. For me, yeah, it's just a big red flag for me. Like, don't you kind of want to know more about what's going on? And he did say he would pardon Assange and Edward Snowden. That trumps everything for me. I mean, if he literally was going to pardon them both, I'd be like, okay, we need RFK. And obviously he was amazing on COVID and there's other things that he's been good on. But like, I don't believe he'll pardon Assange and Edward Snowden because Trump said that he was going to do that and he didn't do it. So why should I believe that RFK will do it? But, you know, I don't mind RFK. Like, I'm not a hater. Vivek Ramaswamy, I agree with him on everything, almost 90-something%, 95%. I think he would make America look really good on the world stage because he is Indian, he's young, he's very intelligent, he knows how to handle the media, he knows how to fight back against fake news and the establishment and everything, but I don't trust him at all. He's very smooth. His stance on Israel, again, is a red flag for me, especially because I've seen him change what he says depending on who he's talking to. So he at least wants to like basically defund Israel and stop sending them money, which, you know, that's better than most of the other candidates want to do. But a lot of the kind of like the left wing or the libertarian or whatever anti-establishment podcasts and shows that I listen to, and Dave Smith being one that Vivek has appeared on, he sounds a lot more reasonable on it when he talks about not giving them money. And then I've watched him speak to the actual Jewish groups and he sounds like a Nazi dictator when he talks about how Israel should just, you know, wipe them out. Like, it's like scary stuff. And it's not even that I disagree with him, which I obviously do disagree with him, but seeing how it's like, okay, so you change how you word this depending on which who you're in front of, to me, that shows you're just a typical politician because that's what politicians do. But you're running as like the, I'm not the typical politician, but bitch, I see you doing things that typical politicians do. And then he also will not criticize Trump, who I like Trump, but there's plenty to criticize on Trump. And he has, Vivek has criticized Trump in the past. Now he won't say a bad word. Trump even attacked him and he still won't. And it's because he's maneuvering to like get Trump's fan base and everything and like get the MAGA movement behind him. And I just feel like, girl, you are such an opportunist. If he came into power though and he did a lot of what he said that he would do, that would be amazing. But bitch, I'm not going to trust any of you, RFK, Vivek, none of you, until I see you in office like doing it. At this point, actions speak louder than words. You can say whatever you want, you can pander to whoever you want. Unless I really see action, I don't believe any of you. Actually, one of the only people I do believe is Jill Stein, who I've always liked. She was totally smeared during 2016, and she was spilling the real tea about Trump and Hillary Clinton, and they did the hugest hit job on her where they said she was a Putin puppet and stuff, which was bullshit. And ironically, she's the only Jewish candidate in the race, and she's the only one that is like tough on Israel, and she actually would free Assange and Snowden. Chunky, stop it. Shush. He's just like rolling around digging and like sneezing and stuff. Chunky, sit, because I've been on here talking too long. She actually would free Assange and Snowden, but she's not going to win. And she would stop the wars, but like she's not going to win. So it's like, does it even matter that I like Jill Stein? But yeah, I would take all of her crazy environmental stuff and all of that if, yeah, she stopped the wars, stopped, you know, helped the people of Palestine, stopped funding Israel and freed Assange and Snowden. I would, yeah. That would be my president, Mrs. Jill Stein, but again, it's never going to happen. And as for Trump, I love what he did for the culture in general. I love that he made a huge part of the population not trust the media and not trust the FBI and the CIA. And he kind of like, you know, whether it's intentional or it was just who he was, he gave the establishment enough rope to hang themselves. And they did. And I almost feel like what he did for the culture and the way that he woke a lot of people up to criticize these establishments, which before were like kind of, you know, you couldn't really go against them. I think that's almost more important than like any policy decision. Of course, policy is important too, but this was he really brought about a cultural reset. And then on top of that, they are blatantly trying to rig the election against him this time, which for me automatically then makes me want him to be president because I'm like, girl, you are not going to go against what the American people want and decide the elections for them. The fucking CC, the Democrats in on that because they rig every fucking primary. They interfere in elections. They're trying to interfere in this one. They are trying to rig it against Trump, period. They did do it last time. And, you know, I was never, ever, ever on the election interference bandwagon. before, I felt like Trump lost fair and square because I thought he did a bad job on COVID and then all of, you know, the civil unrest going on. And I felt like it was close. I felt like if Trump had written a few more stimulus checks for the people, that then he would have beat Biden. But I was never into the whole, like, you know, they rigged the voting machines and they were casting ballots from like dead people, etc. Like all of that, I never believed it. And I still don't believe it. But I have been looking into the stuff like a lot more lately. And there's a lot of truth to things with the Hunter Biden laptop, which I've been mentioning recently a few times, because I really got into that and saw the FBI's involvement in that, which is all facts. That's not, you know, Alex Jones conspiracies. Because obviously the laptop, people like to make it about Hunter's personal life, right? Why do you care if Hunter Biden's with hookers and doing crack? He's not the president. Well, it's not about that. It's about the money he was getting from Ukraine and how Joe Biden was compromised to foreign countries and that his son was selling access to Joe Biden. And then was that influencing certain policy decisions? Because then look what happened with the whole war with Ukraine and Russia. And then on top of that, the Democrats inflaming BLM. I feel like they tried to make that worse on purpose to sabotage Donald Trump. At this point, I believe that. There's a lot of questions about January 6th. I was never a January 6th truther. I have been looking into that more. Again, I'm not at the level of thinking, you know, everything was just completely staged and, you know, the Fed staged it all. I'm definitely not there. But there's a lot of things in there that it's like, oh, that's a little weird. Like, that doesn't add up. You know, you've really got to like look into it to see. But girl, there's some shady shit going on. So when I see them all coming out desperately trying to stop Trump, like, of course that makes me be like, well, I want Trump to win. So all I know is that the Democrats fucking must lose. The Democrats need to lose. And Nikki Haley needs to lose. And I mean, Ron DeSantis needs to lose too, but definitely Nikki Haley and then whoever else, you know what, whatever, I'm fine with it. Someone said thoughts on Gypsy Rose's release. I've been meaning to cover Gypsy for a while and I don't know if I'm even going to get around to it because I was waiting for the Lifetime series and then I saw it's like a lot of episodes. Like I thought it was going to be three episodes max. It looks long as hell. And if there's one thing that I don't have patience for, it's for a drawn out true crime series that never ends. True crime things never fucking end. There is too much information. They milk them out so much. And it's such a turnoff for me. So the jury's out on if I'm going to watch it. And I've been off work this month preparing to move to the US, which hopefully I can still do after dropping this podcast. And usually I would just like watch it in the background. But so I don't know, but I do think she's completely oversaturated in the media. Like it's way too much. Like it's absurd. And I'm a fan of hers. And before she was released, I was like, you know, I was doing it all, stanning Gypsy Rose, like everyone. And like, yes, bitch, yes, queen, yes, queening Gypsy Rose. And all ready for her to come out. And now it's just like so much. She was even on the Vile Files, Nick Vial's podcast. How the fuck did Nick Vial book Gypsy Rose? That's what I want to know. Like, it's like maybe he has some big money talent firm behind him now that can see him as, I don't know, a big deal. So they've thrown him this interview. Something is going on. That's the real conspiracy, is how did Gypsy Rose get on the Vile Files? And I know that there is a lot of schools of thought about Gypsy Rose that she like manipulated the first guy to kill her mother and now she's off scot-free and he's rotting in jail. I haven't looked into it enough, but, you know, I support her and her mother's disgusting and I'm glad her mother's dead. And I like Gypsy and her weird nerd boyfriend, who totally looks like a pedophile, by the way. But, you know, I support them. Okay, last question. Someone said, what is your favorite bitchy Australian slang terms besides bogan? Well, I don't use a lot of Australian slang because it, like, I do say bogan, but just a lot of it is so, it's just so unbecoming. It's so ugly. I cringe when other people use Aussie slang. It's just so not my people. I feel like I didn't even say bogan that much until, I don't know, starting the podcast, because I've had to talk about Australians and it just is like the best word to describe it. But I do like gronk, which is similar to bogan, like you fucking gronk. So I do say gronk. I say Macca's instead of McDonald's. Well, I say both, but sometimes I'll be like, yeah, like, can we go to Macca's? Because we shorten everything. I do say Mrs. sometimes. So I think they do this in the UK as well. So instead of your wife, you'll say your Mrs. Like, oh, who's his Mrs.? Like, that's his Mrs., you know, like Mrs. whatever. Instead of that's his wife, that's the Mrs. So I do say that. And then cunt, which has been very mainstreamed now. I feel like ever since Bridesmaids said cunt in that joke, where she's like, well, you're a little cunt. Now everyone says cunt, but before that was really just an Australian thing and we just threw it around all the time and it was considered very shocking to everybody else in the world, but it's like very common here. And you can use all different variations of cunt because my dad always said like cunting, which I say, like if you like stubbed your toe, you'd be like that fucking cunting thing, you know? So I will say cunting if something goes wrong and I'm like really angry. So yeah. All right, guys. Now I'm going over to Patreon for the rest of the AMA. Going to talk about the Summer House season 8 trailer, the worst mothers on Bravo, my dating life, places that I want to visit and travel to, plans for the pod, my thoughts on other podcasters, what else is on there? Yeah, favorite movies and stuff like that. All right, guys, thanks for listening. And patreon.com/unpopularjp if you want to support me there. If you're offended by my Israel-Palestine take, like you don't have to bother, you know, writing to me. I don't read the reviews anymore. Like I literally turned it off so it doesn't alert me to the reviews. I have my replies switched off on social media. If you want to send me some, you know, stupid message of, this would all end if Hamas handed over the hostages, which is not true. I'm just going to delete it. Like if I see the first lines of it and I can see you just going to send me some lame, you know, bullshit, bitch, I'm not reading it. But other than that, yeah, thanks for your support. Bye.